Hello, everyone. I'm Jamie Flinchball, host of People Solve Problems. And today we have Rebecca Snelling of RS Consulting. Rebecca, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. We've talked shop many times before, and it's just another chance to do so. So just as a little introduction, Rebecca coaches people, teams, and organizations on leadership and transformation with an emphasis on advancing culture. We certainly share some interest there. With a lot of work in the design and construction industry, works with clients to understand their current and target conditions, helps them develop and execute a plan to effectively reach their goals. So you've had a lot of work working inside companies and a lot of work working with companies all over the place. So thanks for sharing your experience. I don't think design and construction, this is unique, but certainly a need to collaborate, bring a lot of different disciplines together. So that's, you can't get away from collaboration. So how do you approach collaboration in problem solving, either, you know, just when you're leading it or as in your role as a consultant?
Yeah, you know, Jamie, that's a tricky question, because I think it really depends on the problem that you're solving, right? And understanding who it impacts and what the problem really is and who touches the outside of that problem. An interesting story, one of the first times that really occurred to me that you might even want someone who has nothing to do with your problem involved in helping solve your problem, when we were in a session and we were trying to build a plan for doing some construction work on a garage. And there was someone who was invited to the planning session by mistake. Like, he was a trade that was not, he was a painter. He really had nothing to do with the work that was happening, but he stuck around just to see how the conversations were going. And we ran into this one really tricky, sticky issue. And she came up with a solution that was no one, even the people who were going to be doing the work, was able to come up with. And it was like light bulbs going off for everybody. So I think it really, starting off with identifying what the problem is and the people it touches, but then sometimes even having an outside perspective or someone who's familiar enough with the content and getting them involved can be really helpful with that kind of a thing with collaboration.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love those stories where somebody comes in from the outside, and, you know, I've had those experiences. I don't think we've ever done it by accident. So that's kind of fun.
But that was even better.
Yeah. My experience, you know, sometimes it's not the solution. It's just asking the so-called dumb question that everybody's afraid to ask or never thought to ask that unveils the big insight or aha. But what are you looking for in say that outside person that comes in? How do you pick the right person to come in and play that role?
Yeah. So when you're more intentional about it and it's not an accident, I think having someone that's at least familiar enough with to be able to speak the language in some way, shape, or form. But like you said, maybe removed enough from that situation that they can ask, I'll say dumb questions, but really just the obvious questions that everyone else has assumptions are carrying forward about. I was talking to one of my clients just recently, and they have a younger person who's only been in the industry for 2 years, out of college for 2 years, and they're leading a number of these kinds of problem-solving conversations with their organization. And he was talking about their being young and green, being, you know, a little bit in the way sometimes. And I think that actually is a benefit when you can, as long as you can speak relatively effectively and with confidence and all those kinds of things. And of course, it obviously takes a culture of psychological safety amongst that team to be able to ask a question that everyone else is carrying an assumption for the answer with it and poke in those kind of things. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. It's we kind of give out that advice. Yeah. Include somebody from the outside, but I've never actually heard anybody even talk about how do you pick that person? So always interesting. And there's something else you said in your answer to the first question that I was really intriguing. You said touches the outside of the problem, right? And I just want to pick at that a little bit more, because there's always some people that are obvious that need to be included, right? They own it. They're closest to it. It's really clear. But then there's degrees of touching the outside of the problem. And sometimes, like, we fail to include those people and we fall short. Sometimes there's too many of them and it becomes a burden. So I'd love your thoughts on how much touching of the outside of the problem needs to happen before we include them. How do you think about that boundary condition?
Yeah, I think that, again, is something that shifts based on the size and scope of the problem that you're talking about. Sometimes if it winds up being an awful lot of people, because that gets in our way of being effective, right, at solving right. the problem, then perhaps some pre-work where you're talking to some people and getting some of their insight and perspective, or if you do happen to have them all in the room, having them break up in little groups and talk about and share information and then report out to the larger group, but some way of filtering some of that down. Because sometimes it's really just perspective, and other times it's grounded perspective, right? And there are things that are actually making those things happen. So some of it is noise and some of it is helpful. So you have to really discern. And you brought up a really good point that, sometimes people think that, you know, we need to collaborate on every problem we're trying to solve, and we need to invite all 300 people in the office every single time. And that just gets in people's way. And then we never actually get things accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, when people ask me, how many people should be involved in problem solving, I say as few as possible. Now the as possible is part of what we're picking on the question, right? But bigger is never better. It
right.
might be necessary, right? To get the right folks in the room. But I even see templates where people, say, oh, what's your team? It's like, well, why do we assume there needs to be a team? We shouldn't always assume that. So
yeah. One of the things that actually makes come to mind for me, Jamie, is if your problem really needs to have 30 different people involved in it, you might have multiple problems that that you could break down into much smaller, more manageable group sizes for the sake of being effective.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, the message is to approach that not with an unthinking mind, right?
Right.
Be critical. Challenge yourself, think about every person you add and know why they're there, including the scope of the problem, as you just said. Don't just assume that the scope is the scope and the team is the team.
Right. Yeah.
So a big part of that was speed, right? The bigger the team is, the slower they're going to move. That's one of the reasons we want a smaller team. So how do you balance, speed, just How do we get problems solved faster? How do we get improvements done faster with thoroughness and rigor and inclusion and all those other factors in problem solving? So there's a lot of people say, I don't have time to do it well, right? So need to do it fast. So how does speed factor into this, and how do you balance it with other needs?
Yeah, Jimmy, it feels like there's a pendulum on so many issues, right? And we start off with the pendulum being all the way pulled over to one extreme. And then we learn something new and we pull the pendulum past the balance point where it's like, great. And all the way to the other side where it creates a bunch more waste and a bunch more. I mean, even think about email for those of you who can remember when that first came out, it was a godsend. And now it's the kind of thing that makes you groan, right? Because it's gone past the point of effectiveness. I think problem solving is no different. And there are two things that, and collaboration and problem solving as well, there are two things that I like to think about with that that are separate yet connected. The first one is using just a simple pick chart, right? Like, where are we going to get the most value for our effort going into this and the most payback? And the least amount of effort that will go into it, and look for those opportunities that'll give you the biggest bang for the time investment. Where is a problem likely to continue to recur as opposed to not? Then maybe you do a quick fix as opposed to a deep dive fix. And the other piece of that is, it's what your podcast is all about. It's what your book, People Solve Problems, is all about. And in my mind, it's frankly what lean leadership is really all about, is developing that problem-solving skill in people that top to bottom throughout the organization, right? So the more you've got that skill embedded in people, the more you can get smaller groups of people more frequently solving problems more expeditiously because they're more skilled at it and things of that nature. And I think that's how you can then start to, your pick chart becomes less important because now you are able to attack those things. And looking at the problems that will help you get more time to solve more problems, right? And one of the stories I talk about a lot came from The High Velocity Edge by Stephen Spear, or Chasing the Rabbit, where he talks about the nurse Betty, who does, the nurse, they didn't have time for problem solving, and they cut out like 15 minutes every single day, and they started to then have more time on their hands because they were cleaning up more issues. And so those are looking for things that'll help pay back more time for you, I think, are really, really helpful.
I love it. So three levers to pull, pick the right problems, break it down, find smaller ones, ones that pay you back faster. Solve more problems to build capability. More capability you build, the more problems you can solve. Becomes less of a trade-off, and build room or time in your organization for improvement, and then more problems you can solve as well. So,
yeah. That last one that you just articulated about building time in your organization for problem solving, particularly in the construction aspect of the design and construction world, generally, people have very high expectations of the amount of time they are supposed to be spending in operations, doing operations on projects. And so I think it's even more critical and I imagine other industries have something very similar, right? And building that time in, I think, is really important, or you'll just create more and more problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I always look for the patterns across industries. And I think one of them is where a lot of the leadership comes up through the working levels in the organization, which is true in hospitals as a corollary, yeah. Right? You don't have a lot of leaders of a nursing wing that didn't start as a nurse, right?
That hadn't been a nurse, right?
So they understand the work at a detailed level. They can do the work at a detailed level. And it's very comfortable to jump into that. And so sometimes it's harder to pull up and work on the broader stuff because you understand the weeds so well and
right.
Can make such a contribution to it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about ideas because, generating ideas is a big part of problem solving. You work with teams and you work at most, not only, but a lot in design and construction that, it's been a lot of reliance on older ideas, but there's a lot of opportunities for new ideas to create breakthroughs. And you mentioned, the one where the idea came from the outsider. So how do you approach ideation, brainstorming, again, whether it's your own problems or you're leading a team or helping an organization?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it comes down to the topic that you're trying to ideate around or brainstorm around, but really having crystal clear expectations that, hey, this is what this time together is about. We are looking to collect ideas. There are no bad ideas. It is what we really want are half-baked ideas so that the team can kind of, or the group or the company can build on them together. I have one client right now. I'm working with a group of folks mattered throughout the organization, and we're coming up with We've been doing some learning for the last 12 weeks. We're coming up with a plan in our next call where we're going to pull all of those things together. So it'll start off with a mural board, and I want all of you as homework and pre-work, put your ideas in there, and then we'll pull them together. When we're, you know, in person in that kind of a setting, you know, a lot of just basic good facilitation skills that, you know, there's a book called Liberating Structures that has a number of different methodologies that you can use for pulling these things out. And they offer all of them free online too. And then just one of the things that I think not only creating the psychological safety so people can feel unencumbered to come up with something that's not fully thought through, but getting them to commit in writing to themselves on what their ideas are will help drive some of that into the conversation. And frankly, you know, going back to the point you made before about people growing in industries that have been on the bottom and grown their way up, it's a little harder generally to get them to think out of the box because they've got years and years of great experience that have given them great lessons. So really pulling on those younger generations and those folks who are newer into the industry or into a company, right, who's coming from a different company, even a competitor, right, and getting them to share what they think before the people who've been in an organization for a very long time doing things the way they've been doing them, you know, say their part, and then build a conversation from there.
Yeah, no, I love that. You know, you prevent people from anchoring to a single solution too early. And I think the you know, one of the keys you said is getting the ideas out there before they're fully thought through.
Right.
Is especially in a team setting so essential, because the missing piece of your idea to get it fully thought through might come from somebody else. So if you don't say it early, it'll never get where it needs to go.
Yeah. And you, Jamie, that's honestly, I look at myself and I reflect on some of the things I've done. I am much, much, much better at coming up with great half-baked ideas than I am coming up with fully baked ideas, right? It is. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And we waste a lot of time and energy in silos trying to come up with the perfect idea.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome. Well, last question for you, because you brought up kind of the background of that story is, you know, asynchronous and synchronous collaboration across a virtual work using a Miro board, which I think is, even when people are in person, I think the use of Miro as a tool, and tools like it, but I do think Miro is the best, just personal experience. But it really can help with some of that collaboration through all phases of that work. So do you just have any advice or ahas from your experience working with a distributed team and working with tools like Miro for others?
Yeah. So I think finding ways to replicate the way you would facilitate in person that keep people engaged. And so just to be clear, I use Mural. I think that's the best, but different opinions. But they're essentially the same thing, right? And when I am in person, I don't travel without my sticky notes, right? And Sharpies, because they, I think they're the single best tool that we have when it comes to collaboration and driving some of those conversations. So whether you're doing it virtually and people are kind of in their own space, or you're doing it in person, getting people to commit to their ideas is really one of the foundations that helps you then grow to the next steps.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing your experiences, your stories, your perspectives, and I'm sure our listeners will grab a lot of nuggets that they can learn and build from.
Thanks again for having me, Jamie. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine.
Thanks for listening to the People Solve Problems podcast. Let's keep the conversation going. Visit jflinch.com for more episodes and other content. And continue to join us on your podcast app, of course. We greatly appreciate your feedback through reviews and ratings. consider expanding your understanding of problem solving with Jamie's book, People Solve Problems, The Power of Every Person, Every Day, Every Problem, available on Amazon. Until next time, keep learning, innovating, and solving problems.